Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolecast. Bud really enjoyed our podcast that we were able to do upon your return from Hawaii, and judging by the numbers and feedback that we've received, it was well received in general. One thing we didn't get a whole lot of time to do was to talk about just the general observation that we have from practice so far, and to just kind of give an update as far as what we can from talking to people behind the scenes, and also what General has been able to be observed through some of the open sessions. So this will have a little bit of a roster discussion, as we might have a little bit more clarity as to one linebacker in particular, have a real solid but not unexpected recruiting update. So this will just pair as almost like a part two of our discussion last night and or two nights ago, and excited to jump into it as always.
Indeed, man. I think we'll probably do about an hour tonight. So Ingram, instead of an ad read to start tonight, because I know a lot of people sometimes find those are predictable, how about we bring this from one of our readers who I forgot to write down his name, but he says, wanted to give a heads up regarding the Nolecast. I just recently started listening and want a way to listen to it on my Amazon Echo, which I think is like one of those Google Home device things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Found an app for it called AnyPod, like AnyPod, A-N-Y-P-O-D. I emailed the developer and asked he add the Nolecast as a supported stream, and it is up and running. So those of us with an Echo device need to ask Alexa to enable the AnyPod skill and then play the Nolecast. Great job on the broadcast, and go Noles. Go Noles, man. Wow. That's pretty sweet.
That's a solid on you. Appreciate it. Appreciate you emailing the developer and getting us up and running there. And yeah, that's a nice little reminder as to the product that Louisiana Hot Sauce brings to people and the multiple ways that they can enjoy it. So
that man deserves a gift card, sir.
He does. I would send him a bottle of hot sauce, but I'm not sure that's really worth the shipping that's tied to it. But we'll get him a gift card, and thank you as always to him, and thank you to our sponsor who makes it all possible as well, Louisiana Hot Sauce.
Absolutely. Great sponsor, and glad to be back doing these shows with you more regular. And it just feels like folks get to listen in on two guys having a conversation. We also have another bit of good news to pass on, Ingram. I know we were both really excited to hear this tonight.
So we think we have some pretty solid closure to the Matthew Thomas episode, and we think this is going to end up on the side of the good guys, I guess you could say that, or at least on the side of the way that the vast majority of the fan base and really everybody that follows this program would like it to, and that's for multiple reasons. Obviously, you'd love to have a supremely physically talented linebacker out there, but also Thomas has been with the team for a while and has had his ups and downs, and you don't want a kid to necessarily, fall short of being able to contribute and really have his money year. So not anything guaranteed, but it looks like Matthew Thomas has been the beneficiary of his head coach maybe going bat for him, and also maybe there being some things that he had done correctly just weren't logistically lined up right, and all the things that maybe had to get cleared up behind the scenes as well.
So, Ingram, what I am most happy about is that Matthew Thomas is no longer sick.
Yeah, that's true.
We were really worried about him, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clearly, with that illness that was preventing him from practicing. So, one day after the Nolecast drops, Jimbo Fisher addresses the media and admits that the sickness is no longer the reason why he's being kept out of practice. There are other issues going on.
Okay.
So
that's all you can – good for him.
I'm glad they beat that, antibiotics or, maybe antivirals or whatever that was. Maybe just some bed rest, some chicken soup or whatever. I agree. I respect Jimbo for saying this. Obviously, we talked last episode. There's really no need to BS about it. But just say, look, there are some other issues right now, and I can't really talk about it. And I expect him to be back and hopefully soon. A, that's good news. B, I think that's a very professional way to handle that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to play this song and dance where, we pretend there's nothing other than an illness going on. You mentioned that Jimbo had gone to bat for him. I agree. The feeling I get is that maybe he's gone to bat for him about as hard as he's gone to bat for anybody ever. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think he really cares about Thomas. I mean, a kid who wanted to transfer out, remember, to USC in his freshman year, a kid who I believe lost his mother, right? You know, just a really like some tragic events in his life. And I love the kid. I want to see him back on the field. You know, I think he's a heck of a player. Now, did it scare you a little bit today when Fisher started commenting on just how well or you know, just how much he liked Emmett Rice, who is Thomas' backup?
That is generally, historically, sends up red flags. Yeah, it does. It did, but I you know, good. I hope Rice is playing well. Always been a prospect that the two of us have been pretty positive as to what the ultimate end product could be there. But yeah, that was something that caught my attention. But I think ultimately, I think this ends up well. And going to bat for him almost has a connotation that like he went and strong armed somebody or something like that. I really don't think that's the case. I just think there was a lot of moving pieces here that had to be lined up that weren't necessarily all congruent as of 2 weeks ago or so.
I totally agree with that. I think that there is a realistic. I don't think any of us have ever said, "Hey, he's done." Right now, I think you can believe that he was perhaps like if the season started today, would he be eligible to play? I don't think so. But that doesn't mean that he won't be tomorrow, next day, next week. Now, missing all this practice time is not good, but it is probably pretty prudent for them to get Emmett Rice some reps. And by the way, that is one thing I wanted to address, Ingram. We've had a lot of people ask us, you know, what about Dontavius Jackson? And Dontavius Jackson made some big-time strides in the offseason, got in much better shape. He tweeted out those photos or Instagrammed them or whatever that showed how much weight he had lost. And I'm sure he's moving more quickly despite the knee brace thing. But he plays the Roderick Hoskins position, not the Matthew Thomas position. And it's not they're not the same. One guy is asked to go and be a little more rangy and make more plays, and that's never been Dontavius Jackson's game. The backup is Emmett Rice.
I think almost in people's mind, Bud, with the way that the linebackers have been shrinked as far as the responsibilities that, you know, like historically you would think, all right, well, that's a – you know, that's an outside or that's a rover and he traditionally has these and the Mike traditionally is built like this. I think almost the two linebacker in a lot of people's minds has just turned them into interchangeable pieces if you're running a nickel.
I think that's an easy assumption to make, but in practice, I don't necessarily think it's necessarily true. From everything I've been told,
I don't think it's true at all. I just think that's the general perception of when teams are running a two linebacker set from some people, not from everybody.
I got you. And from everything I've been told, Dontavius Jackson has not been taking reps at the Matthew Thomas spot. He's been Roderick Hoskins' backup. So unless that they have some kind of weird plan to switch that up, and certainly they cross drain and whatnot, blah blah blah. But I don't think that's necessarily going to happen here. Kind of TLDR of this conversation that too long didn't read. Fisher seems optimistic about getting Thomas back. He actually used the word should, I believe, as opposed to, you know, like probably. And I'm excited about hopefully getting Thomas back. That's good. And I'm glad he's not sick anymore. You want to talk a little scrimmage?
I think we should talk just a little general team observation and what we were able to take from the scrimmage. Yeah.
So I know we both talked to sources about the scrimmage. Obviously, the scrimmage is closed to the media, so what do you have to do? You have to kind of kick some rocks and text some people who are there, whether they be coaches or maybe high school coaches who are there or whomever. And let's chat a little bit about how that goes. And normally, if you're a new listener to the Nolcast, we sometimes will go in the order of importance, but a lot of times we'll just break it down so we don't forget a position and just go kind of, you know, QB, line, running back, receiver, tight end, and then switch, talk defense second. So that's probably what we'll just do tonight.
So normally I find when you have a closed-door scrimmage, it takes about 24 hours to get a decent feedback as to how exactly it played out, and I'm not going to misrepresent this. It's not like I have a full idea as to how every play went and every player performed, but you do get a general feel from talking to people. So with that in mind, let's start at the quarterback position and not trying to scare anybody, but I'm not sure that Francois necessarily had the best of performances.
That's consistent with what I've heard as well. Just missing open throws, which kind of made me cringe a little bit because that's what he did last year. You know, that's kind of the thing holding him back, along with processing speed, from, you know, being an elite quarterback as opposed to just a decent or good one, which is what he was last year. He's not yet a superstar. He's looking to become a superstar. But, you know, it's one scrimmage, man. We should also point out that a lot of this scrimmage was ones v twos. So it's not like he's facing the first team defense. They are going against the second team defense. But still, from what I was told, that the defense had the far upper hand, even though it was the second stringers, which, mm-hmm. you know, is concerning in some ways, but it's the first scrimmage and it's not uncommon. In fact, I think it's very common around the country for defense to be ahead of offense because defense is not really a team game. It's more of a collective individual effort, and offense is a team game.
Absolutely. Common around the country at any level you play at. I mean, I always remember high school ball, just defense. It takes an offense a week, 10 days to get up to speed, and the defense is always further in front because, like you said, it's not really a team game, and necessarily there's certainly some aspects to it, but defense is just instinctual. You have an idea as to what you're doing, and you more or less go out there and do the same thing that you've been doing since you were a sixth or seventh grader. So, that is a little concerning, and if that is a trend, then I'll put more stock into it. If it's just a one-off from one of the earlier scrimmages of of the camp, then chalk it up to what's in general to be expected. I will tell you one thing that I did not expect, Bud. I did not expect to get reports that the offensive line might be better in pass blocking than they are in run blocking. That's not generally what I think out of this line, and it's not necessarily what paired with the reports that you got from the open scrimmage from last week.
Yeah, I think that's definitely not consistent with what we heard from the open practice last week. But it's interesting, man, that those reserve defensive tackles, you know, the Wally Ime and the Fred Jones and maybe the Marvin Wilson and those guys are making plays. You know, that's what. Very encouraging to hear. You know, Jalen Wilkerson, a guy who is kind of a one or two on defense, making some plays. It's also potentially, you know, discouraging. Basically, what I was told is that the run game was just not consistent, right? Like, there were some good runs, but they didn't consistently run the football like you wanted to see. And that's discouraging to me on one hand, but it's also encouraging about the defense. Maybe this defense will just be so damn good that they shut everybody out. Probably not, but. You know, there are some things about the offensive line that I find really curious. We talked about Derek Kelly a little bit last episode, but, you know, is he playing because others just suck? Or is he playing better now that he's a full year removed from the knee surgery, or some combination of both? I don't think he'd be playing there. If everybody else was playing really well, he would have to be playing at like an otherworldly level to pass them up, right? Because he's coming from pretty far behind. And I don't really believe that everybody starts with a clean slate every camp. So I have to think that there's some level of disappointment within the staff in some of the offensive tackles. But I also think it's fair to believe that Kelly is playing better now than he was last year. And we liked him a lot as a redshirt freshman. So I think that part is perhaps encouraging.
Liked him a lot. Certainly a kid that's got all the physical attributes that would be needed to play that position. It's a kid that if you put stock into this, some do, some don't. It's a kid that wanted to be a Seminole. It's a kid that waited and passed up offers from larger schools to make sure that he had one to Florida State. You made a good point, and it certainly wasn't the most complex thing that you've ever said, but you made a great point in the last podcast, and that was, could be good news, could be bad news. Could be good news that Kelly's playing this well, or it very well could be bad news. It certainly, I don't know if it's bad news, but it makes you question necessarily what's going on with the offensive line when you've had this much of a lack of continuity in both the players but also the messaging surrounding the players as to why, you know, Rick Leonard's at this position now, why he 6 months later is at another position, that you're primarily going to have a focus on your left tackles, these two younger kids, and then all of a sudden Kelly looks to be your starter. He'd be your starter today if Alabama was today, as referenced by your head coach two nights ago. There's just been a lot of inconsistency as to where players are lining up, but also the reasoning behind why and where they're lining up.
Right. I think that's probably a greater thing worth following here down the stretch. Ingram, did you catch the Sports Illustrated story on center Alec Eberle?
I've read most of it, but I haven't read every line. But I'm familiar with the story in general, and I'm a fan of Andy Staples and his work on the whole. But I've read about 75% of it, to be completely honest with you.
I mean, just the double labrum surgery on his hips, and then he talks about having to tell himself that, you know, he's not going to die. He's not going to die because his pain meds wore off, but he couldn't signal his mom, who was in another room or something like that, and he just had to lay in bed in agony for like 6 hours. You know, there's a pretty serious human interest story there, and he is a tough son of a gun. Now, he also wasn't very good last year. Like, let's not use this to say...
Yeah, we don't have to sugarcoat that. Yeah.
I do view his season in slightly different context, because if you recall, I reported a couple of months ago after playing in the golf tournament for the Fort Myers Knolls or the Naples Knolls. I think it was Naples Knolls. That Jimbo had said that he had like an inch or two of bone taken off each hip, right, to allow him greater flexibility. I kind of wrote that off as Jimbo speak, right? And maybe in some ways it could have been, or just at least Jimboflation, which is the term we use when Jimbo exaggerates stuff by, you know, hundreds of pounds or whatever, as he's wont to do. But, you know, the double hip surgery, man, the fact that he had that suggests to me that he probably was very physically limited last year, in addition to the fact that what year is he last year? Was he a redshirt freshman, or is he a redshirt sophomore?
You're normally better at this. I think he was a redshirt sophomore last year, but I'm not positive
of
that.
I do, too. Let me look this up. Here's our trademark Bud typing in the background. As our iTunes.
We'll have that available as a purchasable ringtone sometime soon. Look, we've had an awful lot of reviews, and I know a lot of the listener base has already done so, but whether this is a justified system or not, but there's really no easier way to support the Knollcast than given a 5-star review on iTunes. So if you have 2 to 3 minutes, it probably won't even take you that long, but it's just a great way. And like I said, it's probably not a just way to judge podcasts, but it's the way that sponsors and a lot of other people look and view at the podcast. So if you have an opportunity to leave us a review, it is always much appreciated. And the overwhelming amount of support that we've gotten from our listener base is one of the reasons that we're able to have a sponsor like Louisiana Hot Sauce, and one of the reasons that we're able to bring you a podcast 48 hours after the one that we just published.
All right, Ingram, you ready? He is a redshirt junior.
So we were right. He was a sophomore, a third-year sophomore.
Right. So, look, which third-year sophomore is not super young, but it's also not necessarily an upperclassman. And if you look at a guy like Eberle coming out, he's a guy they like, but he was certainly not a superstar recruit. So, to me, that's a guy who oftentimes is going to need a year of redshirt development, a year of sitting, and then maybe, you know, play some games as a redshirt sophomore. You know, ideally, you're not really dependent on that kid till he's a redshirt junior, you know, or redshirt senior. When I combine the fact that I think he probably did have to play too early due to some depth issues, with the fact that he was that injured, and the fact that I know the staff likes him a whole lot, I got to tell you, I'm changing my opinion on him somewhat. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's going to be a superstar or even that he's going to be a star of any type. But I think that suggests that maybe he actually does have the potential to play significantly better than he had been playing. Is that fair?
I think it can allow you a small amount of optimism, but it certainly can allow you to reopen the book on the evaluation of what the player could possibly be. I don't know. Look, I don't know that getting 2 or 3 inches of bone shaved off is going to let him bend that much more. That's what I've been told, but that is yet to see. But if 25% of that story is true, then you have to think that you have a player that's a lot more able to contribute, and maybe more importantly, a lot more able to mentally focus on what he should, rather than having to focus on the fact that this series won't kill him, or this 4 plays won't kill him, or this next step won't kill him, because of the type of pain that he's suffering.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to running back, where my sources
I think we got good
real
news
good
here.
News here, man. I do. My sources are saying that Jaquez Patrick and Amir Rasul are actually living up to the hype, which mm-hmm. is, I would say, kind of surprising. I mean, I feel like we've always heard the hype on Rasul, and you know, granted, he's not always stayed healthy, but and Patrick is a guy who, honestly, we've asked, does Jimbo Fisher even like this guy? You know, I mean, he there were many times last year where the game was fairly comfortably in hand, and you could have spelled Dalvin Cook and kept him fresh you know, put another back for a series or two, and it just didn't happen. And it led us to wonder, like, what doesn't Jimbo like about Patrick? And I think we had some decent answers for that. You know, he's not that fast, and, you know, maybe you have to call the offense differently for him. But I've been told he's played very well. We spoke, I think, on the last show that he showed up into camp or two shows ago. He showed up into camp some of the best shape of his life, and you know, how I'd seen the kid basically since he was a freshman in high school, and I don't think I'd ever seen him with abs. And he came in pretty, you know, pretty chiseled and ready to go to work. And Amir Rasul is showing out as well. So I think that is something encouraging here twofold. Number one, it increases your depth. Number two, you have an all-world five-star back in Cam Akers, who was a quarterback in high school, right? So it may take a minute or two for him to totally get the system down. The question is, do you want to roll with Akers against Alabama? The upside to that, to me, is I think he's the most explosive home run hitter upside type of that of those guys. He also potentially offers the highest downside with, you know, having freshman moments in a game. Are Patrick and Rasul good enough to be able to hit some home runs and make special plays against Alabama if you want to have an actual shot to beat them? Maybe they are.
I think Patrick's special play is more turning the 4-yard gain into a 21-yard gain or something like that. Rasul certainly has that ability, and not that I need to tell you or anybody else that. I mean, he's got legit top end speed. The one main reason why I say this is good news, Bud, is because nobody doesn't think that Cam Akers is ultimately what a lot of people assume his final product's going to look like. People are in Tallahassee that I've spoken with are incredibly encouraged by what they've seen out of him. This is not some of the praise about Rasul and Patrick is not a byproduct of Cam Akers not being the prospect that people thought he was. Yeah, there's been some uncertainty as to angles of a running back use or exactly what hole to hit at times. That's what you expect out of a freshman, particularly what you expect out of a freshman that played quarterback, as you referenced. But Cam Akers is still Cam Akers. The good news here, if you're a Florida State fan, is that you've got a Jaquez Patrick that's gone through a kind of a 2-year body transformation, and you've got an Amir Rasul kid that Fisher's always gone out of his way to mention and praise when talking about the running backs, who very much has put him in a place to be the prospect that Fisher's talked about. So I think you've got three really good options and three options that you'll see against Alabama.
Absolutely, dude.
Bud, good news at the running back position with the depth that you have and three players that ultimately I think will contribute and contribute from game one. Let's move our focus to the wide receiver position where similar but different. You know, similar in the fact that you've got three really solid players that you feel comfortable with. Different that depth at no time will probably be a point of confidence for Florida State, and particularly with what maybe the fourth option is currently.
I came away from these first 2 weeks of practice, I think the top three receivers have the potential to be pretty damn good, and I think they have a potential to be better than they were last year. However, the fourth guy right now is a walk-on, and I'm not trying to disparage Jared Jackson, but Ingram, I think there's a good chance Jackson's going to catch a decent number of passes as the fourth receiver in this rotation. That's a little bit scary, right? That depth right now is kind of paper thin. I've been told that Auden Tate is catching the ball really well. Keith Gavin is showing some explosive potential he just moves much faster than a big guy, you know, a guy mm-hmm. his size right. should. And then Nunu Murray, you know, we'll see. The question with him is always going to be consistency. Is he going to have the maturity to be a number one receiver, or is he always going to be a headache? At this point, I can't confidently tell you that he will be a number one receiver because I don't know. You know, and I don't think this coaching staff does either. I know they still get on him about running routes. Third year in a program, you figure that stuff might be done, but maybe not. I think the Tate thing, though, is the most encouraging, because I think we always knew Gavin was a freak. Tate is a guy who has to come along a little bit. If he's bending better, if he's able to get open more, he always caught the ball very well. He always used his body pretty well. I'm encouraged by that. And, you know, we'll see if any of these other guys, you know, maybe he who should not be discussed is able to pass up Jerry Jackson if he can run some routes and catch the ball better than he has so far in camp. But I like the top three. They just got to stay healthy, because I think the drop-off is rather significant.
Yeah. Jackson's somebody that they like a lot, and happy to be able to have a walk-on, really provide depth and push players. Ultimately, I don't think he's your – I think he's your four right now. I don't necessarily know that he'll be your fourth option going into September 2nd. With the man that we refuse – or the man that we wait with anticipation to talk about – ultimately, hopefully, we'll take over that spot. I know DJ Matthews has returned back to the field and is a guy that I expect to work his way into the rotation. But yeah, I mean, if your number four is a walk on, that's indicative of the depth you've had, some of the losses that you've had on the depth chart. But that's concerning. I completely echo your sentiments about the top three. Gavin is Gavin, and very much poised to have a breakout year. If Tate really is starting to use his body better and have a better understanding of what he could be, very true that he's always had pretty reliable hands. That's encouraging. And Nooney's just a little bit of uncertainty, I think, will always exist with Nooney from what I've heard about his time so far. And I'm not saying Nooney Murray's a bad kid or anything else like that. I just don't know that he's going to be somebody that shows up to every practice and is the first guy to arrive, last to leave, and does everything that's necessary to contribute, or at least not have some type of questions as to his level of focus. Again, doesn't mean he can't be a good player, just maybe not the consistency that you would want out of a kid from A to C.
I agree with that. At tight end, no real special notes other than I would not be surprised if Trey McKitty leaps Nasir Upshur. McKitty's showing some things, and yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes your number three tight end with the quickness.
Yeah, I think he will. He's just got more physically to give. He's more fluid. He's a bigger, better target, in my opinion, as far as a downfield option. I think McKitty is going to work his way in and just can make some plays from the. From the first practice, I've had people mention to me that he's got great hands. He's got great kind of a ball catching radius. I expect to see him this year, and it wouldn't shock me at this point to see him maybe have some things drawn up for him, particularly with him in mind. So McKitty's been somebody that I've heard about from the first day they put on shells.
Absolutely. All right. Let's go to defense here. And Inger, before we do, the Noles got a commitment tonight.
From the best linebacker Jimbo Fisher's ever seen, bud.
According to the linebacker, right?
I think I'm going to just mention that anytime we're able to bring up this kid, but absolutely. It cracks me up for a litany of reasons that I won't go into tonight. But yeah, Rescindo Lewis, if you're a regular listener to Nolcast or just a follower of Florida State's recruiting in general, not a name unfamiliar to you, but a really a prospect that you can mark me up as very, very excited about. A traditional linebacker, somebody that can run and hit. And a guy that I know plays with a program that you're real familiar with, and somebody that I think Florida State fans should be particularly encouraged about being able to add to the class.
I mean, great size on this kid. He's physical. He's thick. He's very aggressive. He plays for the Beach, Deerfield Beach, and that school always turns out kids who, man, they hit at that school. That defense plays nasty. Like, you want to talk about one of the schools in South Florida that actually gives Aquinas trouble on a consistent basis, it's Deerfield. Those guys are physical and they're not afraid, and I love his attacking mentality he brings to a defense. I too hope he turns out to be really good, because we're always going to bring that up. By the way, my mom did tell me that I was the best podcaster she has ever heard. So Just I'm adding that to the show. Might put that on iTunes. Ingram, if you could commit, because he looks like he committed from, it might be a Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay, B-dub.
If you could commit anywhere, like a restaurant, where do you think you would commit?
Oh man, I could certainly list some hoity steakhouses in Atlanta, but I'd go to Madison Social, definitely.
I think that's a hell of a call, man. I might do it at Central just so I can get their meatball sub on a Monday. If I was going to come in on a Monday, that's not a bad choice. Again, we are sponsored by the For the Table Restaurant Group. That is called a segue or a transition. For the Table Restaurant Group, three great restaurants. Madison Social, their upscale sports pub with great food. Township, which is their beer hall. Again, with some really creative food. And then Central is their Italian concept. And it's very accessible and creative. And I really like the things they do there as well. Let's check on the Instagram page. And we encourage all y'all to follow them either on Twitter or on Instagram.
Absolutely. I can tell you, my commitment would be made on a Sunday morning, which probably a lot of people wouldn't love to wake up and cover a kid committing. But would be over a Nolcast Bloody Mary and probably the current Banana Foster's pancakes that they're offering. I think that's exactly how I would to choose to select my destination for college.
That would not suck. I might do it at Township if I was committing, maybe as a junior college kid, so I could legally drink a beer, or I was committing somewhere now. Have you seen the new Cobb salad at Township?
I have not, no.
All right, this is pretty cool. Looks like thick-cut pork belly or bacon, romaine lettuce. Looks like guac or kind of avocado, chicken, pickled red onion, and hollandaise sauce.
Mm, that's a twist.
That's the twist. Yeah, man. Yeah. Think about that. With an ice cold beer, I can get down with that all day. Might get my commitment there. Also, many props to Rosendo Lewis for faking out the MC by trying to put on the Miami hat and then spiking it to the ground, as we always like to see. Before he reaches for the FSU visor, that's quality. I'm not the biggest visor guy,
biggest hat game or okay, visors in general.
Yeah. Are you a visor guy?
No, I'm not a big headgear fan in general. My head's so disproportionately large. I just I steer clear of it.
I also I'm losing my hair, so I kind of want to like not. I want to keep sun off my dome as much as I can.
It's not currently a problem for me, but it is a thought in the choice of not wearing hats either.
I started, kind of like after you get a sunburn, you start peeling. I was peeling on the top of my head today. I was like, man, I really am losing my hair from the Hawaii trip. So that's right. That's discouraging. What's not discouraging is the For the Table Restaurant Group with Madison Social, Township, and Central. Follow them on Instagram. Follow them on Twitter. Great spots in Tallahassee and great supporters of the Nolcast. And with that, let's shift to talk a little defense, man.
Let's talk defense. Let's talk there's two pretty clear strengths of this defense. It's certainly the back end of it, but the defensive line and really the depth that's found at the defensive line. We talked about this last podcast, but I think that's become pretty clear from what both of us have heard from the opinions of what transpired in the first practice there.
Yeah, this defense.
Excuse me, the scrimmage.
This defensive line is nasty. I mean, it really is. I if the second team D line is doing what we were told they did in the scrimmage, that's really encouraging. Another thing, man, that encourages me. We'd heard some kind of whispers that Josh Sweat maybe didn't want to play strong side defensive end to the extent they call it strong and weak, which they don't always, and that he wanted to be more of pass rusher type. But he's actually pretty good against the run, I think, and they need somebody against the run because they lost to Marcus Walker, and on the opposite side, they have Brian Burns, who is just an absolute pass-rushing phenom. And I'm not sure how good Jalen Wilkerson will be in his first year moving from tight end to defensive end, so they need him to do that. And from what I've been told, Sweat's been very good, and he's even had some good pass rush moves, which, at times last year he showed some good pass rush skills. I don't know if he's necessarily showed that great burst, but maybe that's coming back. If that's coming back, look out, because Brian Burns has just been smoking people in practice, from what I understand. So Josh Sweat, kind of manning up and taking that other side, playing a little more, you know, on the point and engaging blockers, playing the run, that's really encouraging, man, because you know Nottie's a beast inside there. You know Christmas is a great number two. I mean, I think your three and four are just about as good as anybody in the nation, you know, at a three and four.
I think your real luxuries here is like, hypothetically, let's talk about who your third string defensive tackles would be, bud.
Okay, so that would be Marvin Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And take your pick, Arthur Williams or any of the new freshmen. I'm trying to think. Am I missing somebody here?
No, I was going to say the freshman and Arthur Williams. I mean, when you talk about what you have at Wynn Jones, you just have so many incredible options on the interior that absolutely, I think Florida State has a real kind of just a ton of options that they'll be able to get an incredible amount of rotation. Obviously, that's beneficial at any position, particularly on the defensive interior. And I think Odell said this is as deep as a unit as he's ever had, which that's not a position group that or a position coach that's been there for, you know, 4 or 5 years or something like that. That's a guy that spans damn near a quarter of a century coaching defensive tackles in Tallahassee. That's if that's true, then that's one of the more significant statements I've heard as far as a representation of the roster.
And Ingram, I always kind of think that depth doesn't necessarily win you a game, but it can oftentimes save your season, mm-hmm. right? That kind of like we were talking, hey, Alabama has, you know, I just finished up the blue chip ratio piece, right, which I write every year for SB Nation, and I can give you all a little sneak peek of that. Alabama has 80% blue chips signed in the last 4 years. I've been tracking this since 2011 and since a little bit before that as well. So over a decade of data, I've never seen a team have a four-year run where they signed 80% of their players be 4 and 5 stars. Now, Florida State has 65%, right? And that's very impressive. It's tied for number four in the country, I believe, along with LSU. Ohio State is like 70-something. But in a single-game setting, and it does matter because it means, you know, your guys who end up starting have beaten out other, you know, other fellow 4 and 5 stars and iron sharpens iron and all that stuff. But the depth doesn't matter quite as much in a single-game setting as it does over the course of the entire season. I think that applies to FSU here as well. Over the course of the season, having those defensive tackles is a really big deal. But it could help in the game because you can keep some guys fresh. You know, if I can have Derek Nottie fresh in the fourth quarter because maybe, you know, Fred Jones took 10 or 12 snaps over the first three quarters and played admirably and played without being a weakness, well, that's a big deal. I like that a lot.
I think that's a good point to put on it. And, yeah, depth necessarily not going to win you a particular battle, but over the course of the season, it's something that can make a huge difference. And it can be, you know, it can be the difference of whether or not you're able to win that 9th, 10th, or 11th game that's on the schedule as far as what you're able to deploy. And if you're going to ask me any position in college football that I'd want depth at, it's probably either quarterback or the interior of the defensive line. So Florida State in a really fortunate position there. And with that, Bud, let's move our focus to linebacker a little bit. Heard some encouraging things. Certainly if what we opened the podcast with about Matthew Thomas, that's going to be as significant a boost to this unit as possible. But also a lot of talk about Emmett Rice, as we referenced some of the praise that Jimbo Fisher dropped on him recently. But also the play of Hoskins appears to be at a level where he's very much going to be maybe step into a little bit more of an impactful role.
Indeed. Okay, so Ingram, I'll ask you this, be honest here. Were you expecting anything really different out of Derek Hoskins? Because I kind of feel like he was one of the more known commodities on the team and just had kind of been, I don't know, like roughly the same for 2 years, you know? But from what I've heard, he's stepped up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Is that surprising to you? Because I got to tell you, that kind of caught me off guard a little bit.
That does surprise me. If there was, and this may not be fair to the kid, but if there was any like quantity that I thought I knew and knew exactly what you'd get out of, Hoskins would probably be on the top three of that list. And that's a list of players that I know what you'll get out of them, both on the ceiling and the floor. That's not necessarily, you know, confident that you'll be able to get level B this year and then a kid that can jump up and play at a higher level in the future.
So regardless of whether Matthew Thomas makes it back or not, I am very encouraged by Roderick Hoskins making some more plays. And he's a guy who's always kind of just done his job, but really not a spectacular player. Not a guy who you think, hey, that's a future pro or anything. But, hey, I mean, never know. It's not against the rules to make a leap in your third year starting. By the way, Ingram, we have a quick announcement to make. Congratulations to Tom Sutton and his wife, Catherine. He writes, and he believes this is a first, and it is a first. Hey, guys, love the podcast, and I usually listen at the gym or while doing yard work. That's not the case today. I'm tuning in from the labor/delivery room at the hospital. And indeed, he is, because he has taken a photo, I'm not sure with whose phone, of his phone with the Nolcast on it and the delivery bed, the medical bed there in the background. Now, he did not put a picture of his wife in there, obviously, so that is excellent crop work, Tom. My wife and I are expecting our second child, and I believe by now they've had it because he sent this August 4th. I completely expect a shout-out because I'm pretty sure this is the first time anybody's asked this for the podcast. Thanks, Tom. So, Tom and Catherine, very much congratulations on your second child, and that is a first for the Nolcast. So,
first for the Nolcast, and appreciate you bringing us along for the ride, Tom. I saw that email and replied to you, and best to you and Catherine.
All right. So, Ingram, did you know, I believe we discussed this earlier in the show, that Dontavius Jackson is not the backup for Matthew Thomas?
Yes. Yes, that is the case.
But did you know he was 216 or 218 pounds?
This is the person that would be the backup to Matthew Thomas.
Correct. Emmett Rice. Yeah.
Yes. A little skeptical of that he's been able to push his weight up quite that far, but hey, look, if he's 212 pounds, that's a nice direction for Emmett Rice. The game has changed, and it's not necessarily fair to compare players from 10, 12 years ago, but, I mean, Kendall Pope was never north of 220 and was a hell of a college linebacker, and Emmett Rice has a not necessarily the same skill set, but similar. If he's able to continue to carry more weight, a lot of people originally made the comparison to Telvin, which probably isn't fair, but Emmett Rice, ton of potential, and if he's able to keep weight on and play at the same level with the same quickness that we've seen from him, then, yeah, you could have an absolute ball player there.
So Jimbo said he's bigger than Telvin was when Telvin played here, referencing Telvin Smith. I think they have somewhat similar games. Jimbo seemed very high on him, talked about how physical he was, how he loves to hit. I think that's all probably very true. I'm going to set the over-under for Jimbo Flation here at 5 pounds, Ingram. 5 pounds. Okay. You going over or under for 5 pounds of Jimbo Flation off the throw weight?
That's about what I said. I said if he's at 12, then I'm fine with that. Yeah, 5 pounds. I think that's – I'm going to take the –
You going to push?
Yeah, I'm going to push on that. I think you put the number right where it is.
Also, Jacob Pugh, who won the spring MVP award, continues to make a lot of plays. I know both of our sources were very very complimentary of the spring that Pugh has had so far, and Jimbo Fisher reflected that in his comments today as well. So encouraging there. And I know you got some news on a true freshman at the defensive back spot.
Yeah, I made a kind of a passing reference to this at the end of last podcast, but man, there'd been nothing but praise from anybody that I've talked to, and I think you've heard a similar tale to this point. But the offspring of the kid that tried to kill a Miami receiver on a crossing route 15 years ago is very much poised to be able to make plays and contribute as a freshman.
Yeah, Stanford Samuels III, man, that is that's damn encouraging. So today I went to the bank and had to fixed an issue with an account, and because the lady wasn't in, I had to wait for her. I did a little Q&A on the Tomahawk Nation account, and I said, I got to ask, what true freshman other than Cam Akers do you think is going to contribute the most? And I said, I think it's going to be Stanford Samuels, and at this point, I would be surprised, but not shocked, if he ended up as a starter. Now, I say that largely because of the intel you gave me there, that he's actually been taking a decent number of reps with some of the starters. So that's probably encouraging or discouraging, almost in the way that Derek Kelly is. Like, where are some of the other guys? But at the same time, Samuels is a dude who probably should have been a five-star. Very smart, hard worker, tall, length, super athletic, knows the game. Also played quarterback some in high school, so understands what offenses are trying to do.
Right.
I think there's a good chance he's a three-and-done guy to the league, assuming he can stay healthy. That's encouraging. I just wonder how well he's going to play the run at that size, because he is pretty skinny.
He is, and that's, you know, that's a little bit of a concern, but nothing but real positive feedback as far as what that kid's able to offer. Coaches love him. Acts like his father was a professional football player as far as how he handles himself. He treats the game with respect. He works his tail off, and he's got all the physical attributes and physical skills that are needed. I think I don't know if that kid's your day one starter, but I think that's a guy that plays a much larger percentage of reps than maybe we would have thought even 2 or 3 months ago.
All right, let's play the over-under game. We're going to put this on our sheet. We're now going to start tracking this stuff, by the way, I've decided. Over-under, Ingram, for not for the Jimboflation. We're not going to track that. There's no real way to measure that. Over-under career starts for Stanford Samuels III, 34.
In the 34? I'm going to take the over on that, bud.
I think I'm going to – yeah, this is tough, isn't it? I think it's a good number.
Because it's very much reflective of how the team performs and how many games he's able to get in his second and third year.
Right? If he goes pro early. I mean, like, right. Obviously we're really reaching there to talk about a kid who's never started a game going pro early, but you have to acknowledge at least the potential. There's a lot of factors.
He plays the position that if you can get it and you can get it early, a lot of kids will leave just because there's really not that whole much you're going to be able to change on people's mind when you're a defensive back. And that's true for a lot of positions, but if you put it on tape, you can get a hell of a lot of money playing the position in that league, and really it's advantageous for you to go ahead and jump.
Oh, 100%. So speaking of which, Jalen Ramsey's been looking good in Jaguars camp. No shock there. So 34, you're going over.
It's an optimistic peg, but that's the direction that I'll go in.
No, if I had to take it, I think I would probably probably join you, but again, I can't take numbers if I'm setting them. Let's transition here to a little non-Florida State talk and talk about the Florida Gators, Ingram. They have great quarterback depth.
Yeah. Do they? Do they?
Excellent depth. Better depth than Florida State, I think.
Or is they just uncertain and maybe a transfers lining up and taking third string snaps? I'm not sure.
So, you know that old phrase, if you have two quarterbacks, you really have none?
Mm-hmm.
What do we say if you have three quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Right?
What if one of them's a real known quantity and he may have a nice last name and he may be a good kid, but you're pretty damn sure he's not a quarterback? What do you make of that?
Today on Twitter, Gator fans were saying stuff like, if Del Rio is the starter, I'm putting all my tickets on StubHub and call me in 2018. So.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
Maybe introducing a new coach, too, if that's the case. But,
He knows the offense really well, Ingram. Knows the offense well.
Sure. He may know the offense, but I may know the offense really well. Doesn't mean I'm going to be able to go and play quarterback. Man, if Del Rio's their quarterback, best of luck to him. I'll be excited to see where that goes. That's wild. Ultimately, I think Zaire is probably your quarterback there, but that's the fact that there's some uncertainty, I think, speaks a decent amount as to what Florida's quarterback position could look like.
So, all right, let's try to be as positive as we can here and sort of like you would with a defendant. Let's infer the evidence, you know, in the light most favorable to the Gators. Maybe there's an argument that Del Rio was injured last year and that he actually has more arm strength than he showed and blah, blah, blah. I still think if Del Rio's the guy you're running out there, you're not super excited about it. And it probably says a little bit about the transfer kid you took, Malik Zaire, who, mm-hmm. you know, we'll see. And then Felipe Franks, the kid who's now a redshirt freshman, I believe. Bill Connolly's preview came out, and he pegged him, I think, at 8-4, mm-hmm. which, you know, hey, I can see
which
it.
Which is kind of the quintessential Florida record over the past 6 or 7 years, it seems.
It is, and almost always in the same way, right? Like, excellent right. defense yeah. and just nothingness on offense.
Nothingness.
By the way,
and a real disappointing end of the season. That's the recipe for the Florida Gators of recent.
It's almost like you'd rather suffer those losses in the beginning of the season and then build on it, right? Like, as opposed to finishing the year with that kind of taste in your mouth. Ingram, are you interested in knowing the 4-year trend on Florida's rolling blue chip ratio?
Yes, very much so.
Check this out. In the 2014 year, they had accumulated a 54%, which is pretty damn good. Florida State mm-hmm. this year is at like 65. But 54 is pretty solid. When Florida State won the title, they were at 53. So next year, it dropped down to 46%. Last year, 39%. And this year, 37%.
This is what I would call a real strong trend. That's hard to believe, man. It's hard for me to believe that Florida is what it is right now. And there's so much the fact that would be the recruiting direction that program would follow, particularly with a new coaching staff. But also there's so much that just doesn't seem like right at the DNA level with that program. Florida is a program that has really exceptional quarterback play, or is supposed to when it's at its best. Really good quarterback play. Entertaining offense, a coach that isn't necessarily like beloved by the media, but plays the game and is, has a big personality. That's more the description of Spurrier. Urban Meyer more had the media just eating out of his hand, or we could make less family friendly references to that. But it's just such the opposite of what you have, and I'm not trying to point light at the photo from the summer and everything that surrounded that, but the way that McElhane dealt with that, it was just so bizarre to me, and let me know, not necessarily that the job is bigger than him, but that, like, if you can't make light of that, or if you can't, like, sit there and act like this is some kind of crazily personal attack on you, your family, the program, etc., I just don't know that that's a real fit. And it's one of the stories that I'll be following as close as possible over the course of the season. It just doesn't seem like the parts are there for Florida to really be Florida.
Now, Ingram, check this out. What the real underlying story here is that last year, the recruiting class they just signed is pretty talented, right? I mean, 23 signings, 11 blue chips. That's, basically half. The problem is their 2014, 2015, and 2016 classes, 70 signees.
Right.
Only 22 blue chips.
Well, there was no traction gained, and I realize one of those doesn't carry over.
Well, they had a lame duck Muschamp who signed not a very good class, 9 out of 24, and then the first two classes for McElwain.
Right, that's what I'm talking
14
about.
14 out of 46.
Just wasn't there for a new head coach and a new staff and the excitement that's supposed to go there and the support of the boosters, and you can read into that whatever way you want to. It didn't translate into the first Wednesday in February. It flat out didn't. And the momentum that you have to get as a coach, that you have to be able to go in and sell kids about a new plan, new leadership, new direction of the program, just never materialized on the recruiting trail.
So what's weird here is that they seem to be turning this around much later than you normally would. Like, normally, if you don't capitalize on an early momentum, then you're dead. And maybe they are, but they're going to sign a pretty damn good class this year, I think. And mm-hmm. last year they signed, they closed pretty strong and signed a pretty good class. It's so weird. You almost never see a coach just bomb his first two classes and then all of a sudden pick it up. But maybe it can be attributed to the probably there's no maybe about this. It is certainly attributed to some of the right. staff changes he made
exactly.
to bring on some guys who aren't just, like lames. And he got some dudes who can actually recruit some. But that's a lot riding on the season. By the way, Bill Connolly projected a 9.5 wins for Florida State, which matches up with a lot of the Vegas stuff. Probably 10-2, most likely record there. per his number. So if you want to, you know, use the Connolly system for Florida 8-4, you probably should note the 9.5, roughly 10-2 look for FSU.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, for you to say that we think we might take this an hour tonight, I think that worked out damn near perfect. Don't think we have anything else. We'll certainly have some more talk about camp and probably have some more recruiting conversation to take place. Maybe some 2019 news will come down the pipe in the next 10 days or so for Florida State. We'll have to watch and look for that. But I think tonight that will probably put a bow on this particular episode of the Nolcast.
All right, guys, let's remember, you can listen on Amazon Echo now. Let's get those 5-star reviews on iTunes and keep them coming. We Ingram, you know we passed 600 5-star reviews?
We are comfortably north of 600 5-star reviews, so very much appreciated by everybody that's taken the time to do that.
This concludes this episode of the Nolcast. Make sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts, write us at thenolcast@gmail.com, or tweet us at Nolcast. For the time being, we're going to use the intro music as the outro music as well. Today's date is August 16th, 2017. For Ingram Smith and Bud Elliott, this is your producer, Judson Wright, signing out.